Hi, my name is Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and this is a two-part podcast on the challenges of budgeting in the public sector. The first part of the podcast, we're going to have a look at the approach to budgeting that's traditionally used and what problems that you might encounter in using that approach in a cost-constrained public sector. And the second part of the podcast looks at how we might take a more strategic approach to budgeting in the public sector. Now, both the podcasts are aimed at qualified members, and both the podcasts are aimed at members who are actually involved in the budgeting process and want some practical, useful ideas and some things to watch out for when preparing their budgets. So let's have a look at part one. And in part one, we're going to have a look at the traditional approach to budgeting, how you probably prepare your budgets already. And the key part, or the key focus of this part of the podcast, will be to make you aware of some of the issues, some of the pitfalls that you might come across when preparing your budgets in what I would call the traditional manner, what we might call the bottom-up approach to budgeting, but more of that later. Well, let's start this podcast with a little bit of a recap about why we have budgets, what the benefits of budgets are, and so on. And you know, if you want, you could fast forward this bit, or you could just take a moment to listen to it. Why do we have budgets? Well, number one, to help us plan operations, absolutely crucial. We need to know what we're doing, how we're doing it, how much resource we've got to actually undertake an operation. Secondly, we've got the budget there to control expenditure, absolutely crucial in a cost-constrained public sector, that we control that expenditure and we live within the budget that we've been allocated. Thirdly, we need to then be able to allocate specific amounts of expenditure to specific outputs or activities within our public sector organisation. We might also use the budget to motivate members of staff as opposed to demotivate them. To motivate them in terms of setting them rewards in return for meeting their budgets. Next, the budget is useful for coordinating activities, so making sure that different activities are tied together, because we've got the budget for the organisation, which is a master plan for the organisation. And lastly, the budget is a way of communicating plans. The budget is a way of telling people what you've got to spend and how you're going to spend it. And that can be internal communication, and it can also be external communication to the users of the information, the financial information. So I just want to think about how we prepare budgets. Do we prepare budgets in the public sector based on outputs? Now, by outputs, I mean, what service do we want to deliver? Is that the focus? Is that the start point for creating our budget? Or, this is more likely, this is more traditional, I suppose, do we base our budgets on being able to run the departments within the particular public sector organisation that we're dealing with? And certainly this podcast in the first part will focus on that latter approach, where we budget in order to fund departments within our organisation. Now, in the private sector, the private sector has the advantage of being led usually by its revenue budget. The start point for a private sector organisation would be to create the revenue budget, first of all, to look at the level of income that it was going to be able to generate, and then to drive all of its activities, or all of its departments, if you like, by that revenue budget. So it would know how much revenue it was going to have, and then obviously would need to keep its costs below that level of revenue, and that would then dictate how much resource they could have in each department. In the public sector, it's different. In the public sector, you have an allocation, a financial allocation that's given to you, that's filtered down from central government through central government departments and then through to operating arms of the public sector. And the public sector organisation that's specifically then trying to use that allocation in order to fund its organisation, in an ideal world, could look at outputs and funding its outputs and what it had to do, or what was in its capability to do with that allocated budget. But more often, what we tend to do is fall down the pitfall of actually instead looking at the departments that we have to run within our public sector organisation and trying to control the expenditure within each department. So what we do is we tend to take a micro approach to managing our budgets rather than a strategic macro approach. So we're going to focus on that micro approach in the next few minutes in this first podcast. Within a public sector organisation, you will get many different departments: human resources, finance, IT and communications, facilities management, procurement, operations. And what tends to happen is we tend to create budgets on a what we call a bottom-up basis, in that we will go to each department and we will ask them to prepare their budget for the forthcoming year. And what each department will then do is they'll then probably use an incremental approach to budgeting. So they'll look at what was spent last year and they will then add a little bit for inflation. And automatically they will be increasing the level of spending that they think they're going to have. And what this does, of course, is it helps build in inefficiencies. So first of all, it assumes that costs are going to rise by incrementalizing the budget, adding an inflation increment on. And secondly, of course, by looking back at what you spent last year, you're assuming everything that you spent last year was properly spent. So if you had some inefficient expenditure this year, it will just get put into next year's budget effectively by adding an increment onto this year's figure. The other problem you'll have in allowing departments to create their own budgets independently is that the departments will probably be aware of how much has been allocated to the organisation, whether that amount has gone up or down. And the departments will then effectively be vying with each other to get a larger slice of the budget, a larger slice of that budget cake, if you like. So what I've just described there is a traditional bottom-up approach to budgeting. And if you're listening to this podcast and watching the slides that we've prepared to accompany it, I've just done a little diagram that you can follow. So the way things would tend to work, I've given the example of a local authority, and I've said within the local authority there might be a waste collection part and there might be a roads part. And within, let's say, the roads part, there might be a number of different departments, one of which might be repairs. And within repairs, there might be a couple of different teams working on repairs. And what would happen in a traditional approach to budgeting is you'd start actually right down at that team level, right down at the bottom level, and get the team managers who were budget holders to prepare and submit their budgets for the year based on usually large staff costs and any material costs involved. And then that would be consolidated by the repairs manager into a repairs budget for all their teams. The repairs department would then be consolidated into the roads budget for all of the different departments within roads. And then the roads budget would be consolidated by the local authority with all the other budgets. And then what would happen is, once that initial run-through, bottom-up run-through had occurred, then from the top of the organisation, they'd then go back down through the departments and ask people to rein in their spending and try and control that budgeting process that way. Now, a large element in all of the budgets that will be prepared in the public sector will be the staff, or sometimes called the pay budget. In many public sector organisations, this is the biggest slice of expenditure they'll have. For example, in the National Health Service, this is by far the biggest cost. At different estimates I've heard range between 70 and 80% of the NHS budget is on staff costs. Now, in organisations like that, in times of financial constraint, we may be looking at imposing pay restraint, pay controls. And you may be aware that there's been pay controls within lots of public sector organisations. There's been industrial action taken on the back of that. And those pay constraints are very, very controversial. The problem that we have as budgeters, though, with pay constraints is simply imposing a pay constraint will not necessarily restrict the level of pay, or will not necessarily keep the level of pay at the same or a lower level to what we had last year. And the reasons for that are that, for example, we might have increments in pay scales. So we might say, well, there's not going to be any pay rises this year, but if somebody is on a banded pay scale where their band has a range from, I don't know, £15,724 to £17,825. And if they're at the lower end of that scale and they'll automatically get an increment this year, then that means that the cost of employing that particular person will go up, even though technically they haven't had a pay rise at that scale. Because a person has moved through the increment, the cost of using them will automatically increase. So that creates budget pressure. You also might get promotions. And promotions obviously will lead to increases in pay. Maybe that the promotion has happened and somebody else has moved on and left the organisation, in which case you're just replacing one cost with another and the overall level of pay won't increase. But it may be that you have promotions where you actually now have more senior members of staff who've moved on to higher grades if you've got a graded pay system. So again, that can cause increases in pay, even though you might have pay restraint in place in the organisation. Also, the cost of redundancies will need to be factored in. If you are trying to reduce your headcount within an organisation, then of course there are costs. There's the cost of redundancy. There are other costs that might need to be factored in, like the costs of the disruption that will take place as a result of having someone leave. It often happens, if reducing headcount hasn't been properly thought through, then often what might happen is that you may end up spending more money on pay. So you get rid of some members of staff, you make them redundant, you pay the redundancy costs, which are large one-off costs, and then you have the problem that you find your understaffed unable to perform the service that you need to perform. And so what you have to do is you then have to go and outsource. Often, you may even be bringing the people you've made redundant back and paying them at subcontract rates, which will be much higher rates than when they were employees. So all of those things are very, very important, particularly in the public sector, because of the high percentage of staff or pay budget that you will have within your organisation. So they're things to look for in and be aware of in this traditional approach to budgeting. Now, I mentioned there that in times of cost constraint, we will be seeking to reduce expenditure in the public sector. And I just wanted to focus at a few issues there. One of the approaches, classic approach to reducing expenditure in any organisation, and particularly in the public sector, is to say, okay, we're going to have an arbitrary 10% cut in headcount. And what will happen there is every single department then has to cut the number of heads by 10%. So regardless of whether a department in your organisation is efficient, is performing services it needs to, you simply cut everything by 10%. It's a very, very poor approach to cost reduction because it doesn't tie in with the strategy and the strategic aims of the organisation, as we'll talk about in the second part of this podcast. As I mentioned previously, if you do a cut in headcount, you've also got the redundancy and then the rehiring costs. Rehiring costs, why? Well, because often if you make an arbitrary 10% cut, you find that you just don't have enough bodies in some departments and they will need to either rehire permanent staff or, very worryingly, they'll have to take on contractors, which will usually cost them more money. What you really want when you're reducing expenditure is a good, detailed analysis of output. You need to be able to see strategically which services are going to be reduced and which services are going to stay the same or even sometimes increase. Where you're cutting service A, you may need more of service B. And that strategic high-level analysis can inform a headcount reduction, but that headcount reduction has to be targeted at the departments that aren't needed or the departments whose activity levels will decrease. And in some organisations, for example, in the National Health Service, they have started to prepare output analysis. In the National Health Service, they have something called service line reporting, where they look at what they call service lines, which would be, for example, something like heart surgery, and they look at the activity levels within heart surgery, and they can then focus their management of budgets on the level of activity that they're going to have within that particular service. So if heart operations are actually going to increase, even though we've got cost constraint, then they can focus that cost management based on that increase in activity. And without that knowledge of the activity levels, arbitrary cuts in, let's say, headcount are very, very dangerous. So they tend to give a misleading short-term picture. So in month one, when you sack a lot of people, make a lot of people redundant, yeah, things look very rosy. But in month two and three, when you start having to rehire people and take on subcontractors because you've got gaps in staffing, then the whole thing falls to pieces. Finally, in this area, just a few other issues to think about when carrying out the traditional bottom-up approach to budgeting, where you're starting down at that bottom departmental level and pulling the budgets together. Some other things to think about. First of all, number one, account code level budgeting. How useful or important or informative is it to budget at the account code level? One very important thing to remember is that as accountants, we do tend to be obsessed with detail. We tend to budget at the account code level because it's nice and neat and we can tie it up with our management accounts, because we do our management accounts at account code level. Our ledgers are set up at account code level. So why not do the budget at account code level, and we can marry the two systems together? That's all very well for accounting neatness, but what value does that add? That creates a lot of time-consuming work for the finance team. And one of the things to consider, particularly when you're trying to reduce costs, and that includes your costs as a finance team, is it actually worthwhile you doing that? Because all that happens when you are budgeting at that level, as you may know, is you tend to get then people, when they do the management accounts, moving things between codes just to make them tie in with budget. And, you know, that whole sort of runaround is perhaps not achieving anything. So maybe with the level at which you budget, maybe budget at a higher level rather than going down to individual account codes. Secondly, the ping pong effect that we have, which I've already described, where you get this budget starting at the bottom of the organization at the team level and then going up through the departments, and then something being pulled together for the whole organization, and then the whole organization finding that all of the consolidated budgets are more than it wants to spend, so it then has to go back down to managers. That to-ing and fro-ing can be very disruptive, and it can cause the budget process to last for an awful long time. So again, we need to think of a better way of doing that, perhaps, and a better way of doing it would be to take a top-down strategic approach, as we'll look at in the second half. Next, a big problem that we may have when we're preparing the budget using this traditional approach is that we often base our budget on last year's figures. Now, first of all, last year's figures, when we start the budget process, won't be complete, because I know if we're budgeting for the 1st of April 2013, we might start the budget process in the summer of 2012, when we've only got 3, 4, 5 months worth of actual results for 2012, 2013. So that's a problem in itself, that we're probably going to have to look at the 2012 year end information to help us benchmark our budgets. But also, we might have poor management reporting. So if our management reporting isn't accurate, if our monthly management accounts aren't accurate, then again, that may be unhelpful, particularly where we're doing incremental budgeting. So it's important to be realistic about how good your previous year's management information is when you're preparing the following year's budget. Tying in with this, the fourth problem is where you try and prepare your budgets too early. I've been to many public sector organisations who've been extremely proud about the fact that they've finished their budgets by November for the following 1st of April. So they're like 4 or 5 months ahead. They've finished their budget 5 months before the year starts. And that has its own problems, because the quicker you finish your budgets, it might look very efficient, but you're then working further away from the year that you're budgeting for. If you finished your budgets on the 31st of March, okay, it would cause massive disruption, but that would be bang up to date, that information. It would be as up to date as it could be before the year started. So early preparation is great for efficiency, but may mean that the budgets aren't as accurate as they could be because it's being prepared too far in advance. And the last thing, point 5 on this other issues, I'd like you to think about the way that you spread or phase your expenditure. Often, there are generally two approaches to this. When we budget, we tend to budget for a full financial year, a full 12-month period. And then what we need to do in order to be able to prepare our variance analysis and do our management accounts is we then need to spread that over the 12 months. Now, we might have a fantastically accurate 12-month budget, but if we then go and divide it equally into 12ths, then that's going to cause massive disruption potentially for our management accounting and variance analysis. Because if our expenditure isn't evenly spread, if our expenditure is phased during the year, then we should phase our budget. So it's much better if you phase your budget. The next question then is, how do you phase it? Well, often what organisations do is they phase it on the previous year's management accounts. And again, I'll go back to some of the earlier problems you might get there. The management accounts might not be accurate. And if they're not accurate or they're not up to date when you're doing your budget, then your phasing won't be accurate. You could also do your phasing, though, based on predictions of how your expenditure is going to spread over the year. I mean, something simple, a simple example might be, for example, in the NHS, if you're looking at flu vaccinations, you're going to do more of them in the winter. You're going to treat flu cases, you're going to treat more of them in the winter. And so that budget could easily be phased to target more expenditure in those winter months than in the spring and summer. Okay, so there's some other issues for you to think about if you're using this traditional, if you like, bottom-up approach to budgeting. And perhaps this way isn't the best way of doing budgeting when we're trying to control expenditure in the public sector. So in the second part, we'll have a look at some different approaches to budgeting in the public sector. But that's all for now. My name's Steve Carlisle. Thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.